Welcome to the Pop Culture Pod Podcast. Now let's begin.
Well, hello, fellow podcast listener, and welcome to the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. I am your host. My name is Chris Lockhart, and joining me is my co-host in crime, Mr. Kevin Deese. How's it going, Kevin?
It's going great, Chris. Thankfully, you know, we had this call planned out in advance, so I was able to remove myself from TikTok for a couple hours.
Excellent. Excellent. Anyway, before we started recording, we were actually like 2 minutes ago discussing about how comic book stores are starting to open up, and Kevin was saying that his comic book store is going to be doing curbside pickup. So, Kevin, you said you just messaged them and then they'll see what they can do for you.
Yeah, my local one has a Facebook page. They got Facebook and an Instagram page. They said you can contact them over either page, you know, the private message features, mm-hmm. or you can call up the store, leave a message in case they're not there. And I actually did it last month. So I messaged them. I said, here's what I am looking for. Do you guys got it? I said, yep, we have it. Don't worry about it. So I drove out there. It's about a half hour away, called up, sent them outside, did my credit card over the phone. They brought the stuff out in a bag, said, see you later.
Nice.
Easy, had everything set for me. So the comics are back next week. Some came out today as we record.
Yes. I was going to mention that.
But next week is when it's supposed to get, like, you know, back to a normal schedule.
And
so I said, hey, here's two I'm looking for. Previews comes out. I need bags and boards. Some of this stuff isn't on my pull list. So if you don't have extras, because I can certainly understand, like, we're only ordering for pull list right now, mm-hmm. and that would make a lot of sense. I said, if you have extras, I'll take them. If not, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
So I'll see you next week. But they've been fantastic for it.
That's awesome. Yeah, so at the time of this recording, it is May 20th, 2020. You know, we are still in the midst of the COVID pandemic. Things are starting to open up a little bit. Restaurants, like where I'm at, restaurants, hair shop, or barbers, that sort of thing, clothing stores, that type of thing. As far as my comic books are, I don't know. Like most of my comics, I buy digitally. And you said, as you said, Kevin, like today they started releasing comic books, but actually, like DC, for some reason, switched to Tuesdays now. So like yesterday, some DC stuff came out, and then today it was the Marvel and the rest of the guys, the rest of the group. But I was kind of taken aback by, like, just how few comics there actually were, because I know, like, May 20th was touted as, you know, the first day of, you know, getting back to comic books, and there actually wasn't a lot there. So I'm hoping, you know, as we go forward, we're going to see more definitely coming out.
I guess because Jim Lee was on Kevin Smith's Batman Beyond a couple weeks ago, and his idea, which a couple other publishers also had books come out today, the idea was if we bring everything back at once, because so many new issues come out, you know, every Wednesday in normal times, it's going to overwhelm the market, it's going to overwhelm the stores, it's going to overwhelm the finances. So let's trickle out some, have everyone get used to operating this way before we have a full release. So I can kind of see that.
Yeah, no, that absolutely makes sense. And yeah, like for me getting my comic books, I think I only spent like $15 today, like to be honest with you. And that's very low for me. Like usually comic book Wednesdays, it's like minimum $30. So yeah, we'll see what's going forward.
Were you getting any of the titles that are now going to finish digitally and they're not doing a print one at all?
That I'm not sure. I'm not sure what's on the list of that exactly.
I was trying to keep up to date with it and then I couldn't. It seemed like every couple hours there was another one they were saying.
Well, I think that's the Star book from Marvel. Maybe that is one of them.
Terrifics from DC, I know, is one.
Yeah, like,
and
honestly, the books I read from Marvel and DC tend to be the bigger ones. Like, they're, except for like maybe Black Cat, that's really the only low key one that I read. So maybe that one, I could see that one going digital, maybe. But Black Cat's big on the variant covers, though, so I don't know.
True. You can't sell a variant cover digitally, really.
Yeah. And I know, like, J. Scott Campbell and other artists have been doing a lot of Black Cat variants. But anyway, we'll see what happens going forward. All right, well, let's move on to our main topic. And then we'll get back into some more geek news. For this episode, we are doing the topic Days of Pop Culture Past. So again, this is another nostalgia episode. We're talking about stuff that just ain't around anymore. Stuff that we used to enjoy, maybe routines we used to have that are no longer an option. And this kind of plays into some of our episodes next month. Like, I'm doing, I think I called it Pop Culture Time Machine. Podcast Time Machine, I think is what I called it. Something like that. Anyway, it was a play on Hot Tub Time Machine. So next month we're going to be doing a couple episodes where we are discussing certain topics that take place in the past. I'll just go over Podcast Time Machine. So our first episode we're going to be recording is called Summer 1990. Believe it or not, it's been 30 years since the summer of 1990. And we're going to reminisce about some of the stuff that went down that summer. So these are the months of May through September. And there was a lot of good movies that came out during that time. And a lot of cool stuff that happened. What made me think about that was the 30th anniversary of the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie. And, of course, the 30th anniversary of the Best of Both Worlds two-parter, Cliffhanger, from Star Trek Next Generation. And then we're going to be doing an episode where we talk about Saturday morning cartoons and cereal. So we're going to be talking about the Saturday morning cartoons that we watched and the cereals we ate while we watched them. So that is coming. So for this episode, it's more of a generic, like we're just going over stuff that, stuff that isn't here anymore. So I got quite a list. I'm sure Kevin does too. So we'll just go back and forth. Maybe some of our lists will have the same things on them. Speaking of comic books, I'll kick it off with a comic book one. I really miss comic book spinner racks. And I'm talking about the spinner racks that you would find at a gas station, at a grocery store, at a pharmacy. You know, like, I'm not talking about the spinner racks at the comic book store. I'm talking about the comic book spinner racks that were at regular stores. They kind of went the way of the dinosaur. I want to say, like, early 2000s. I know one of our local grocery stores, it was about 8 or 10 years ago when they finally got rid of their... it wasn't a spinner rack, but it was a wall rack for comic books beside the magazines. And, yeah, it was like, I want to say, 8 or 10 years ago when they finally got rid of that one. But unfortunately, the comic book industry now is geared more towards comic book stores, which is fine and everything, but it's... Not everyone's near a comic book store. Not everyone, you know, has that access, right? Especially with kids. Like, comic books, you know, used to be geared toward, you know, when they started, they were geared towards kids. And then as kids grew up, they kept reading them. Then they started gearing them more towards adults. And now it's kind of, you know, a lot of comic books are all ages. Except for, you know, the Black Labels or, you know, The Walking Dead, that sort of thing. Saga. You wouldn't see those on spinner racks anyway. But, you know, the superhero comic books, the Archie books, that sort of thing, you would find those at the spinner racks. And I would argue, like, you would you know, like, the comic book industry has really lost out on new readers. You know, like, the kids that are with their parents at the grocery store, they might see that, you know, issue of the Incredible Hulk, or see that issue of Spider-Man, and be like, Mom, I want to get that. And then the next time they go in, they want to get the next one, and then the next one, and then they become readers. Like, for me, you know, as a comic book fan, as a comic book reader, that's how I got my comic books for years. Like, I think I was, like, 12 or 13 the first time I ever set foot into a comic book store. And, I mean, don't get me wrong, I love comic book stores. Like, my mind was blown when I walked into my first comic book store. And it wasn't even that great of a comic book store. You know, in hindsight, it was actually kind of a crappy comic book store. But just to have all those comics and, you know, be able to find some back issues that I was missing, like, it was just amazing. But I really think the comic book industry is hurting, because they're not, and they're going to be hurting even more as they go forward, when the fans, you know, start dying out. You know, who's going to take over for them? Who's going to be the next generation? And those spinner racks really did bring in, you know, generations of comic book fans. Kevin, what are your thoughts on comic book spinner racks?
They absolutely need to come back in some way, shape, or form, because you could make comics an impulse buy for people that wouldn't usually read comics. But maybe that'd be enough to get them interested in it, to get them to seek out a comic shop or to buy more, or even just have an appreciation of it. I mean, my first comic book that I remember buying was on a spinner rack at a Walden Books. Barnes Noble is still around in the States. I mean, everything's closed right now, but, you know, yeah, the chain is still open. They don't have a spinner rack, but they do have single issue comics on their magazine racks. I was at Borders until 2009, and they shut down shortly after in 2010, but they had a spinner rack in all the stores still. But grocery stores, you know, pharmacies, all that is long gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of it is when you have the direct market, you also had an explosion of titles that weren't Marvel, DC, and Archie, because that's your, you know, usually your spinner rack titles.
Yeah.
So a lot of these comics didn't have any advertising in them either. So the entire cost is the comic store, you know, the comic store itself buying it, the buyer buying it from the comic store, them buying it from Diamond, you know, and so on. Magazines are essentially free. They make all their money off of advertising. The $3, $4, $5, $6, however many dollars that is on the newsstand is for the delivery and for that store. The magazine publisher themselves is already taken care of by advertising, which is why you always see those things of like in the States, kids from school will frequently sell magazine subscriptions for the year.
Yep.
And it's like, oh, you know, you can get a year for only $10 and stuff like that. Yeah, because it's already free. They want subscriptions because then they can go to their advertisers and say, hey, 1 million people subscribe to our magazine. You'll reach 1 million eyes every month. Don't you want to advertise with us? Comics don't have that advertising. If you look at your spinner rack era, you had more ads. You had more ads for more popular things, you know, candies and toys and other stuff like that. You know, there's no ad in an image comic for something else that the person could also buy in that grocery store.
Yeah.
You know? So I think that was a big part of it. You couldn't advertise, so what's the point of the magazine companies and stores carrying it if they're not getting the advertising money? And then the comic publishers are just eating that. If anything, I think that they should run more ads. I think if you had more ads, you could have a cheaper price, maybe have the book in more places. And honestly, like, I don't know if I would notice a page or two less of story each month. Like, don't cut in half, but a page or two, a couple pages less, I don't think I'd notice it. And if they sold one or two more ads and it got them in more places and a cheaper price, then I think you'd buy more comics. So that's one of the, not only the spinner racks being gone, so you don't have the impulse buy, But the cost of it, you look at the cost of a single comic, it's like, oh, that's a lot for what I'm getting here.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I think, why graphic novels get so much bigger. It's, you know, better, more bang for your buck.
Yep.
But I had uncles, I had family members, I had cousins, I had all sorts of people that would have random comics because they were out shopping or they were bored or they were waiting for to pick up a prescription or whatever. And they're like, oh, let me just grab this comic too. That looks cool. That cover looks nice.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to randomly be in a comic store, you know?
Exactly. And yeah, well, and speaking to like the ad revenue and all that kind of stuff, I know like my stepsister, she manages one of the local pharmacy stores. And I know she said they got out of selling comic books because there was no returnability. Like say a book, like you know, like the most recent Stephen King book, right? If they bring that in, it doesn't sell. They just rip the cover off the book, send the cover mm-hmm. back, and then they get either credit or they get money back. From that non-sale, right? And then they just throw the book in the garbage. Comic books, and I think magazines are like that as well.
Magazines are like that too, yeah.
Yeah, but comics weren't. Like comic books, you bought it, and that's it. And then comics are supposed to have a shelf life too, right? Like they got, like that's what the date on the comic book. Like if you buy a comic book, like say in April and it says, you know, June, you know, whatever the year is on the cover, that's when it's supposed to be taken off the spinner rack, right? Like that's the latest that they can have that on there. You know, so like for her, like she said, like they were losing money, like they were not getting the money. And I'm pretty sure like she had to order like a minimum amount, in order to have them at all. So anything she ordered, if they didn't all sell, she didn't make anything off of them. She lost money. So she's like, why would I do that? I think the only thing is, I think Archie Comics are a little bit different. I think there's something there, like a returnability or credit or something with Archie Comics, but not with the rest of them for some reason.
It was originally your Marvel DC Image, or not Image, Marvel DC Archie were tear off the cover, send back. I believe they were all from the same distribution place. Mm-hmm. Archie also has those tabloid ones, which are right at the checkout.
Yeah.
So they have, you know, their own niche.
Yeah.
When the people start looking at, okay, well, what comics are selling in comic stores? Let's go have those too. Image wasn't returnable in that way. The one I really remember when I was working at Borders Books is Fangoria, the horror magazine, tried to do their own line of comics for about a year.
Okay.
And they were good, but they weren't profitable. So, you know, they kind of died down. They came in as books, though. So even though they're on the spinner rack, bent, beat up, everything, they could not return it because it was showing up as a book. So it just sat there for years.
Hmm.
Because there's also nowhere else to put it but on the spinner rack.
Yeah.
So it's just like, it was the most mangled copy. It looked like something that, you know, you find buried in a long box from, you know, 50 years ago. But it was only a couple months old at that point. So, but as you had more and more publishers saying you can't return it, you're right. Why would you carry it then?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and it, I don't know. It's unfortunate that the comic industry couldn't figure something out to make it more viable, or not even the industry, the distributors, I guess. They did. I mean, they went with the comic book stores, right? They're like, you know, that's our bread and butter now. We got to cater to those guys. But now, unfortunately, they're dying out too because, you know, they're not getting the new fans coming in. Like, I'm assuming they thought that, you know, the comic book fans that became parents would take their kids into comic book stores with them. And that's how they would get the next generation. And I mean, some people do that. Sure. It does happen. But I just think, like with anything, if your product is in more places, you're going to attract more attention and get more new readers.
Well, I mean, it's almost like the Napster idea, Napster and then iTunes later.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, instead of having to do these weird searches and all sorts of stuff to avoid copyright and get nervous about it, we're going to make it super easy for you to get, super easy to transfer on anything, and only charge 99 cents per song. And it blew up, and they make so much money.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, I have to find the comic store. I have to figure out the hours. I have to see if it's a good one. I have to see if they will be accepting of anyone, kids, women. You know, I mean, we shouldn't have to say that, but there are terrible comic stores out there.
There are, yep.
I have to see if there's enough on the shelf for, you know, because I don't have to pull this and just want random issues. I have to make sure it's clean. You know, there's a lot of hurdles to jump here.
Mm-hmm.
It took me forever to find another one I felt good about. And looking back, I realized, like, oh, maybe there are issues with other ones I went to that I didn't notice at the time. And, I mean, I discovered my first comic shop, and most of them I've gone to on my own. My mom, I don't think, has ever set foot in the one I went to as a kid. My dad has gone into one or two just, like, when I was younger. I've taken my kid into the one I go to, and now at 6, almost 7, he's like, okay, I'm curious, but it's more like I want to see the toys and the posters and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which, you know, it's cool. Like, maybe, you know, that'll get him in the door, and then he'll look at a comic book and be like, hey, I want that too. But, yeah, like, I just feel sorry for the kids who, you know, parents may not be comic book fans, and that, you know, they may have been a comic book fan had that comic book been at the local grocery store, you know?
Yeah. If they had an easy way to discover it.
Yeah. You know, like, if your parents aren't going near a comic book store, you know, how's that kid ever going to discover comics and become a, you know, discover that about himself, that he is a comic book fan? So, yeah, I miss the comic book spinner racks. The one thing I do not miss about them is people bending the books.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, that used to drive me nuts. Especially, like, if it's one I was collecting and putting in to keep, you know, for my collection to keep. Like, drove me nuts. Like, people bending the top of the books. I don't know why. You know, just above the top staple. Like, why? Why would you do that? I remember there was this one time at our local gas station. I can't remember what issue it was. It was an issue of the Hulk, but it was like a more expensive issue. Like, I can't remember if, you know, maybe it was issue. Oh, what issue would that have been? Maybe 450. I can't remember, but it was up there anyway. And I think it was like $4.95 or something like that, or $4.50. So I took it up to the till, and the clerk, like, she just bent the shit out of it. Like, she was, like, literally almost had it folded in half as she's bringing it in. And I just looked at her. I'm like, I'm going to go get another one, a different one. And she's like, why? What's wrong with this one? I'm like, I'm paying money for that, and you've just ruined it. Like, I'm not taking that. And, like, she didn't understand. And I was like, I collect these, you know? Like, would you buy a car and then have the dealer, you know, give it a good kick and a good dent in the door? Would you accept the car then? She's like, well, no. I'm like, yeah, I'm buying this. I'm not going to accept it bent. But, yeah, I used to see that shit all the time on spinner racks. You know, especially if it was an issue that had been sitting there for a while and you hadn't got to it yet.
And I understand it with, like, a newspaper. You buy a newspaper, they, you know, roll it up and put in a bag with other purchases.
Yeah.
But at this point, even at the point of our childhoods, people knew, oh, some people like to collect these comics, baseball cards, whatever. That even if you didn't know anyone that did, you knew that some people did, and so you should treat it with respect.
Well, the thing with this lady is, I know she was an idiot. So, and the thing is, that's exactly what she was doing. She was treating it like a newspaper. And it's like, no, this is not a newspaper. This is a book, you know, that I want to keep, and I respect my stuff, you know. I mean, some comic book fans didn't. I mean, some comic book fans, you know, would roll it up and put it in their back pocket and, you know, and go ride their bike somewhere and, you know, go read it, you know, at the clubhouse or treehouse or whatever. I wasn't one of those. I was one of those that kept my comics in a neat pile. When I discovered bags and boards, I, you know, even before bags and boards, like, I used to use freezer bags to keep my comic books pristine, which used to drive my mother nuts, because when she'd go to use a freezer bag, it'd be gone. but, yeah. Anyway, that part of the spinner acts I do not miss. But, anyway, Kevin, what's first up on your list of things from our pop culture past?
I miss mom and pop video stores.
Nice.
I miss... Yes, there was Blockbuster, but every Blockbuster was the same. Or Hollywood Video for some people, or, you know, whatever you had.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember growing up, every single grocery store and pharmacy, back to that again, had a section that they moved everything around to have a mini video rental area in the store.
Yep.
And then you also had people taking, like, any empty spot in a strip mall and putting in their own mom-and-pop video store. And if you're successful, you might have one in, like, five of the small towns in your area that you ran. But the fun thing for the more independent ones, not like your Blockbuster or whatever, was going in and seeing how they decided to set it up. Do they have it like Blockbuster, where it's the tape case in the front, you know, the original cardboard one, and then their hard plastic actual copies behind it? I remember ones that had little, like, key tags in front, and you'd have to remove that, and it'd have a number on it, and then they'd go back and find the tape that matched that number, and you'd get it. How they organize it. You know, do they put anything animated in kids, no matter what it is, and then get mad when some poor parent rents, like, Heavy Metal or Fritz the Cat, because it was in kids, because it was a cartoon? What's the difference between suspense and horror and thriller, depending on what store you go to? It was also the best way to just find stuff you didn't know existed pre-internet. You're not, you know, you don't have the money to buy, like, all the cool magazines like Starlog and Fangoria and Comic Scene and everyone else. So you're just, like, walking and scanning every shelf and going, what's this? I don't know what this is. I never heard of it before.
Mm-hmm.
And if it wasn't there, that was your mission. Like, I have to keep coming back until someone returns this, because I need to see what this movie is. But you discovered so much that way that you just stumbled into. The only modern equivalent, and it's going to sound so weird, unless you've used it, is Amazon Prime Video.
Mm-hmm.
The way I've compared it is Netflix's Blockbuster. It's all neat and organized, and they got their specialties and everything. Hulu's like one of the other ones, like Hollywood Video or something like that. It's a little different. They'll go a little more edgier, you know, not completely family-friendly content. And then Amazon is just your mom-and-pop video store that bought out, like, other mom-and-pop video stores that failed. And they're like, I don't know, I think we have it. Let me check some boxes in the back. Because you sign on there, and they have all their big shows up front. You know, The Boys is up front. Marvelous Miss Maisel,
mm-hmm.
whatever. Like, all their big shows are up front. But if you want to find something else, you need to start looking. And then you go into the, hey, do you like this movie or TV show? Here's what other people who have watched this also watch. Okay, let me go there. So I was typing in, like, comic movies just to see what they had on there. And then I went to, what else are people watching? That's how I discovered that Image documentary and the Chris Claremont documentary that we talked about before.
Yep.
I didn't know they were on there. There's no, like, easy way to find it. But that's how it was for video rental places. Mm-hmm. And you go to whichever one. It was usually, you go to the one in the grocery store where your mom or dad just bought the groceries for the week. You go to the one next door to, like, the pizza or the fast food place you're getting dinner at that night. Or there's one close to your house that your mom or dad might say, here's $5, go ahead and get some movies. But then you'd be out at, like, your aunt and uncle's house or your grandparents' house or whatever. And there's a different store closer to them. with different things, so you have to check it out. And it became this adventure every time.
Yep.
Who knows what I'm going to find this time? The closest thing, honestly, is probably going to like thrift stores now, or like a Goodwill or Salvation Army, the ones that still have old VHS or, and a lot will carry DVDs.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you're going to see a lot of the same stuff. You're going to see a ton of Disney ones, Titanic, you know, Jerry Maguire, a lot of ones like that. There's millions of copies. And then you'll find something random and go, I don't know what this is. I don't care. I'm bringing it home because I need to find out what the heck this thing is. But I missed that discovery. Like, my kid watches YouTube all the time. If he's watching, you know, something on one of the services, it's an obvious one, like Pokemon, you know, something huge. He's not, he's also very young, but he's not, like, discovering random stuff like I would have at that age going through the stores.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I miss those for sure. I know our local one was called Entertainment Galore. And that's where I discovered the Planet of the Apes, like that movie series. I'd never heard of it before, never seen it. Seen this, you know, the cover of all these movies, and I seen there's apes and the lady at the store, who was a friend of my mom's, explained it to me, and we got them, and yeah, now I'm a Planet of the Apes fan. That's how I used to watch my Transformer cartoons and my G.I. Joe, because none of the local stations aired those cartoons. So I used to rent those from the video store. You know, my sister worked at that video store when she was in high school. Yeah, so many things were discovered there. Like you said, you know, you'd go in there and peruse and see what they had, and you know, unfortunately, sometimes what you wanted would be rented, so you'd have to wait, you know, for the person to return it and all that kind of stuff. And then, yeah, like you said, when, you know, you'd go to the grandparents' house or whatever, like when I go to my grandma's house here, like she lived in the town I live in now, the one local gas station that no longer exists anymore used to have an awesome comic book spinner rack, and it had a little, you know, VHS section in the back, and we used to go there, and I remember renting Back to the Future 3 from that time I was staying at my granny's, and you get a slush and all that other stuff. It was awesome. I definitely miss those for sure. And even the bigger ones, like, you know, I like the Blockbusters and stuff like that. I do miss those as well, because as I got older, you know, I got into collecting certain TV series on DVD or Blu-ray or whatever. So I would go to Blockbuster a lot to check, you know, to see if they had it in. But unfortunately, yeah, everything's gone now. Except for that one Blockbuster. I can't remember where that's at. I think it's in Oregon or something.
I was just saying, it's definitely West Coast. And I mean, that's their whole gimmick right now, is that they are the last Blockbuster. There's also, it's in Washington or Oregon. I can't remember, but if you look it up, it'll come up right away. There's a store called Scarecrow Video, and it still rents, it still opens. It's like two floors. It just seems like every time someone went out of business, they just bought out everything that they had. And it's massive. They'll do mail order, they do film festivals, they do like everything to just stay alive. But now it's like this super niche cult community for it.
Yeah, I know. This is actually a good segue into my next one. There was one of those in Toronto that it was like a video store, VHS, DVD, Blu-ray, that sort of thing. And they still rent it out and stuff. And it used to, like, the TV series Innerspace used to go there once in a while, and they would do segments there. But now Innerspace has been off the air for 3-4 years now. Maybe 3 years. And yeah, so that's the segue into my next one is, I miss TV shows like Sci-Fi Buzz, Inner Space, The Anti-Gravity Room. These were shows that were on the Sci-Fi Channel and the Space Channel here in Canada. Well, actually, Anti-Gravity Room was on YTV in Canada. Sci-Fi Buzz was never on in Canada, but I had a satellite dish, so I got the Sci-Fi Channel from the States, so I watched Sci-Fi Buzz on there, and the Anti-Gravity Room on there. Inner Space is So all these shows are basically like Entertainment Tonight for geeks. Sci-Fi Buzz and Anti-Gravity Room were weekly shows. Sci-Fi Buzz was about pop culture and science fiction, fantasy. You know, Harlan Ellison used to do a commentary on there a lot. David Brin did some commentaries. You know, they would go on, you know, the set of The X-Files. They would go on to the set of Lois and Clark. They would interview, you know, Dean Cain, Terry Hatcher. Like, that, you know, this show aired from 93 to 98. And Anti-Gravity Room, I think, was like 95 to 98. So Anti-Gravity Room was a comic book, basically a comic book version of this. It was a joint venture between YTV and Sci-Fi Channel. And so there was a host from Canada and a couple hosts from the States. They would go and interview comic book creators, go to comic book conventions, that sort of thing. Oh, and Sci-Fi Buzz used to go to conventions as well. But they were weekly shows. Innerspace was on the Space Channel. I want to say it started in the late 2000s, maybe 2009, 2010-ish. And then, yeah, they kept going till 2000. I want to say 2017 is when they went off the air. Maybe 2018. But it was sudden. They originally started as a weekly show as well. And then they became, I want to say 2011. I want to say fall 2011. They became like a day, like a Monday to Friday program. Because, you know, as you know, a lot of programs now are filmed in Toronto and Vancouver, like as far as genre stuff. So, like, they had access to, you know, Star Trek Discovery, for example, and you know, all these other shows that are filmed up here. And they would go and do interviews. They would go to conventions. Like, every year they went to San Diego Comic-Con. They would interview people there. They would go to the Calgary Comic-Con. I actually met the hosts there a couple times because they would do signings and Q&As and stuff. And they had great hosts, Innerspace, awesome people. And then, yeah, unfortunately, they just one day, Bell Media decided to cancel a bunch of original programming, and that was one of them. And it really was sudden. Like, it was like the Friday episode. On Monday, we're doing, you know, we have this story coming up and this story, you know, have a good weekend. And then they never came back. So they had no idea until I think they went into work like Monday and they were told that they were no longer employed. And it sucks. It totally sucks. Like, we have YouTube. We have, you know, a lot of good YouTubers out there that give us a lot of good content, a lot of interviews. I know Sci-Fi from the States, the Sci-Fi Channel, they do a lot of interviews and stuff for YouTube for some reason. I don't know if they have an original show like this anymore. Because we don't get Sci-Fi Channel up here. We get the Canadian Sci-Fi Channel, which was our Space Channel, but it has since been rebranded. But, yeah, it's unfortunate. I used to love these shows. Like, YouTube's, like I said, there's a lot of YouTubers out there that do a very good job and give you a lot of good content, a lot of good interviews and stuff. But I miss seeing, you know, like the weekly form or the weekly format and then the daily format. I really miss that. You know, like, I as much as I like Entertainment Tonight, once in a while, they'll talk about something that you are interested in. You know, but 99% of the time, it's stuff I don't really care about. So, you know, shows like these used to fill that gap, and unfortunately, they ain't around anymore. Kevin, what are your thoughts on those type of shows?
I mean, I'll add to it. In the States, we had G4 TV for a long time, too. And I remember all the shows you were talking about from when I was younger, but G4 TV was in my 30s. Because it went off there, like, not too long ago, overall. This is where Ninja Warrior comes into the U.S., because they bought the rights to the original Japanese show, would do some editing, and just air it.
Okay.
No being silly, no, like, did you ever see MXC? Most Extreme Elimination Challenge. Okay.
Yes.
They didn't do a comedy dub. They did a serious dub.
Okay.
And treated them all like athletes. As the show got bigger, they sent their U.S. hosts over to also, you know, to appear on it, to do interviews, to show Japanese culture. This channel would go live from Comic-Con the entire 3 days and do interviews and do the announcements and do press and just show things. No one else does that. They would have a every weekday live show. Here's all the cool stuff in geek pop culture that happened today. Here's some interviews. Here's some hype. They had a video game one. Now, I'm not a gamer, but I could appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
And then whatever they had the rights to, they had rights to different movies and old TV shows and all sorts of stuff. It became my background channel. I woke up, I would just put it on, have it in the background. Even things I wouldn't be interested in, I was interested in their take on it. And then out of nowhere, they're like, yeah, we sold. The company that owned it decided they're going to sell off the channel. Everyone left. We're all getting fired. Here's a goodbye. And you're like, okay, but now what? I don't have a home for this stuff.
Yep.
Yes, YouTube is a huge thing. But there's a difference between, you know, the shows on Sci-Fi Channel or on Space or YTV or this was G4. There's a difference with it being on TV, being on a regular cable thing. One, it seems like it gives it a sort of validation that YouTube doesn't have, mm-hmm. because anyone can start a YouTube channel, but not everyone can be on TV, in a way.
Yeah.
Also, it gave the possibility of someone who is not interested stumbling across it. And then saying, hey, what is this? I'm interested. Let me stay. Most of us, when we talk about, you know, the first time we saw something we're interested in, Star Trek, wrestling, cartoons, a comic-based show, a sci-fi-based show, whatever, but, you know, the monster movie on the weekends, you know, whatever it is. So many of us have stories of, I was at home and I was flipping through TV to find something to watch. There's not going to be a story in 20 years of, I was at home flipping through YouTube for something to watch. You already know what you're going for. It's going to be whatever you're searching, and then whatever the algorithm brings up.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get the stumbling across things like we had. And that's a reason why I miss those channels. You could have say to someone, oh, hey, I was watching this. They're like, oh, my gosh, I just found that channel last week. Isn't it an awesome channel? Now you've made a friend, too.
Yep.
But, yeah, just a hub for it. I mean, you or I could just, you know, sit down with our phones or a laptop or whatever, film something, put it up on YouTube in an hour. So the things that these shows did, someone else can do. But it was... everything about it, you know, the budget, the presentation, the hosts, like everything that drew you in and made you feel part of something bigger, as opposed to just some guy with a mic in front of him.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, and, you know, being that they're employed by, you know, a television channel or whatever, they had access to, like, press junkets and stuff like that, that most YouTubers do not have access to. But yeah.
Exactly.
It's very unfortunate. I miss shows like that. G4, I had heard about it, but I never actually... I don't think it was available up here. At least not that I know of.
I don't think it was either. If it was at all, it would be that they might like bundle something together to work for a similar channel.
Okay. Yeah, I know I had heard...
And now, of it, like, but... all of it's just sitting in a vault.
Yeah. But... anyway, Kevin, next on your list, sir.
All right. So again, we're gonna have a little border issue here. I miss what MTV was, and I have fine tuned this argument over the years, because everyone says I miss when MTV played videos. Yes, of course. MTV is not MTV anymore. I don't think they. The last time I'm aware that MTV played videos was when Prince died. They stopped playing their reality shows and that garbage and played Prince videos for like the rest of the day. But it's not just that, because yes, you could go on YouTube and find any video you've possibly wanted to watch from any artist ever and watch as many times as you want. But MTV would expose you to new music. Every genre got its own time slot, and it became they had a responsibility to their community and embraced it and did something with it. So, yes, here's our rock hour, here's our top 40 hour, here's our rap hour, you know, here's our alternative hour, and here's a host for each that makes you feel like, hey, welcome, I'm your host, I'm your guide for this world, because I love this kind of music, and I'll help you through.
Yep.
But then also, they're like, hey, there's a whole generation watching us that no one's paying attention to, and no one's talking to, and no one's taking seriously. Let's see what we can do. Huh. We taught them acceptance of gay community. We taught them how someone's living with AIDS. When Kurt Cobain died, we were the only station to talk to these people. They helped a generation become more well-rounded people, because everyone else was ignoring that generation. And they sat down and said, your opinion matters, your thoughts matter, you matter. Would you like to talk? Would you like an outlet to get your feelings? Would you like someone to say something that maybe resonates with you and you're like, oh my God, I'm not the only one that feels this way? And it was comforting. Plus, you're getting all this music and learning and everything. Kurt Loder just turned, 75, I think? But he was seen as a peer to kids in their teens and 20s.
Mm-hmm.
Because he talked to them as a peer. He didn't talk down to anyone. MTV got a whole generation to register to vote. And now what do they have? Trash reality shows that don't matter? I mean, yes, there's part of me that's like, okay, yeah, I can find videos on YouTube, but why would you decide to strip the next generation of all this knowledge and power? Now, maybe that's a financial thing for certain people higher up. You know, why would we want them to think for themselves? I don't know. I mean, even Nickelodeon took a cue from MTV because they're owned by the same people. Nickelodeon's like, we have a younger audience, but they're still wondering about stuff. They still have stuff they don't understand in the world. They still need someone to talk to them and listen to them. And, you know, I mean, Nickelodeon has great shows now that are actually very important for kids, but they don't have anyone teaching, listening, doing a sit, you know, they don't have anything like that anymore. And I think you got a lot of kids that just need to feel like someone is listening to me. Someone thinks my thoughts are valid. Even if mom and dad don't, even if I feel alone, someone is giving me respect.
Yeah, like we did have, like I said, my parents got a satellite when I was 13, I want to say. So we did get MTV, but I think when we started watching it, it was doing the transition into reality, because that's when they started with like the Real World.
Which in its first couple years was equally as valid, though.
Yeah, I can't remember what else there was.
Road Rules.
Yeah, like I think that's when they launched MTV2, if I remember correctly. Because I remember there, like, MTV2 actually had music videos. And then MTV really didn't have music videos. Like, they might have had, you know, the odd hour here or there. And then if I remember correctly, I think MTV2 kind of went that same way, where it was mostly like scripted stuff.
It's all shows. Yeah, it's all shows that they own too.
So, yeah, I kind of know where you're coming from. Like up here, we had Much Music, right? And Much Music was much the same thing, like where it was, you know, music and you know, they had their VJs or whatever. And then they became more, you know, like they were importing a lot of MTV reality shows and stuff, and kind of went that way too.
And yet, as they became Fuse.
Yeah. And unfortunately, yeah, it's kind of too bad that they did that. Because, yeah, I would rather watch those channels for the music, not for the reality shows, for sure. But, All right. Well, next up on my list, I have the Sci-Fi Book Club / Doubleday Book Club. I was a member of those book clubs for years. You know, I like to read. You know, lately I haven't been reading as much as I should be. And my books are all piling up, but I intend to get to them one day. But, you know, for years, you know, like I just, you know, was a part of these book clubs. Where I lived, there was no bookstore. So no bookstore, no internet, no Amazon, no online bookstores. So this was like a mail order thing. You get the, you know, you sign up. You get, you know, whatever it was, like 7 free books, and then you got to buy like 4 books in 2 years or whatever, 5 books in 2 years. And then you get to do it all over again. You get to order another batch of books and buy some more books. So I used to, and I used to be part of Columbia House and BMG. That's another, those are like the CD cassette tape clubs. But the book clubs are what I miss the most. You know, that's how I got my first Harlan Ellison book, was through the Sci-Fi Book Club. You know, it introduced me to a lot of different writers, and I liked it. I liked, you know, once a month you get your envelope where you can go, you know, with your little catalog, you can go through it. You know, pick a book that you want or something that sounds interesting, order it, or, you know, wait till the next month or whatever. And then when you get the books mailed in, it was like, it was like Christmas Day, man. It was like, it was awesome, you know, getting a book in the mail. And then I want to say they went out of business like 11 years ago. Like, I want to say like 2009-ish, 2010 maybe, in Canada anyway, they went out of business. And I was still a member right till the end. Like I actually kind of feel bad about it, 'cause I just ordered like a batch of books and then they went out of business. So yeah, I got a bunch of books for free. I had no idea they went out of business. I just remember like, it was like one day I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, I haven't got my like catalog in like months, like what's going on here. So I actually went on my desktop computer and Googled it and found out they had went out of business like a month or two earlier. It's like, oh, that sucks, you know. Glad I got all them free books, but at the same time I feel bad that they went out of business. Kevin, were you part of any book clubs or anything like that?
I didn't do those. I had a couple of, did I do a book one? I did do a book one. I didn't pay. I did one of those, you know, we'll send you 5 books for a penny and then pay later things.
Yep.
The funny thing was, because I always had the intent to. I really did. I was like, you know, I'm working out. I'll pay. I'll set this up and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I did, they would not be able to, and this was, I was not trying to pull a fast one or anything. They would not be able to read my name or my details. So I would be getting mail for like the weirdest people that don't actually exist.
Huh.
And then they say like, well, we're going to sue Kenneth Decent. I was like, you can sue Kenneth Decent all you want. That's not me. So I'm just kind of back out of it.
Yeah.
But the worst thing is I would look, I'm like, I got like, the worst one ever, and this was within like long enough that statute of limitations is up if the company's even still around.
Yeah,
but I got like these giant beautiful coffee table books. They're just having like some blowout on, and never had to pay for it. And I mean, it's probably like $200 worth of books that I got in one shipment that would never been able to, I would have never thought of buying on my own. But I was like, oh, you know, not my fault. Poor Kenneth is out the money, but I'm okay. But I mean, I think that's my joy of like the previews catalog now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's all the cool stuff? What's this? What's that? It's window shopping on a page. And I mean, like, I remember, you know, there'd be advertisements for stuff like that. Like, do you want to be the sci-fi book club, or, you know, this comic mailing list, or the CDs or whatever? Some of it I would sign up for just to get mail, like not actual product, but just the catalogs and stuff, just to flip through. Because a lot of it's pre-internet, that'd be the way to just find cool stuff. I'm like, okay, I'm not going to do your catalog, but next time I'm at the mall or store, I'm going to look for this. Like, I know I want to buy that, and I'm going to see if they have it.
Yeah. Well, and the thing with the comic, or sorry, the book clubs, is I think they would somehow print the books themselves. Because, like, the copies you would get would not have, like, the cover price on them.
And they'd have the weird cut of the paper too.
Yeah, like
a scalloped almost or something.
Yeah, it to me the way it worked, it seemed like if you ordered like that book of the month, it would be an actual one that you would get from a store. But if you ordered something from their catalog, like one that wasn't, you know, book of the month or whatever, that it would be like this. I don't want to say weird, but it's not the same quality as, you know, Barnes & Noble or, you know, Chapters, right? It would be a little different. And I never really thought about it until this was years ago. Our local used bookstore that unfortunately is no longer in business did this thing like you do an exchange and you get credit for books at the bookstore, and that's what I used to do. I would you know, take the books in that I was done with and had no intention of rereading at some point, and I would exchange them for new books. So I had some of my sci-fi book club books in there, and they couldn't take them because there was no cover price on them. They're like, where did you get this? I was like, oh, it's from the sci-fi book club. It's like, it's a real book. It's got everything in it. And but, I mean, that was their policy or whatever. They wouldn't do it unless there was a cover price because they give you a percentage of it, right, for credit?
Yep.
So, but, no, I do miss those. I do miss getting those those letters every month, with the magazines. Cause, you know, and I mean, sometimes they would do like an interview, like say Harlan Ellison had a new book coming out. They would do an interview with Harlan Ellison where he, you know, or I don't know if they actually did one with Harlan. I'm just saying as an example, you know, like it would be that author, right? And they would do a Q&A with them, which I enjoyed reading. Like it was entertaining.
Well, and a lot of them have, there might not be a book club, but the publisher themselves, a lot of times now has a mailing list. Like I'm on the Tor one, which a lot of the stuff in the emails, I think it's like a weekly email, I'm not going to read. I don't have an interest in.
Yeah.
But every so often there's a real good interview or a real good super advanced notice about a book. I'm like, ooh, all right, Andy, I need to definitely sit down and read this.
Yeah,
it doesn't have the feel of a catalog, much like a, you know, digital comic, ebook, whatever. Doesn't have the same feel, but it's still something.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's great and everything. Like I know I'm on a few different mailing lists as well, like emailing lists. But I don't know. There's something about just getting that catalog in the mail, like the physical catalog. I miss that. I really do. And like you said, like that's one of the, I love picking up those preview catalogs. Like it's very reminiscent of those days, you know, when you could go and just flip through it and, oh, that looks interesting. I might get that. But yeah, it's too bad they went out of business, but I get, you know, I really think it was Amazon and companies like that really squeezed them out, because even when you get the like 7 free books or whatever, 5 free books, whatever it was, you still can't compete with Amazon prices. Cause I mean, those book clubs, a lot of them were charging like cover prices that you would pay at the store, right? Maybe a little bit cheaper depending if it was, you know, from their printer or whatever. But for the most part, like, you know, Amazon, you know, they just couldn't compete. But anyway, Kevin, next up on your list.
All right. I missed toy sections in stores. Mm. Now, I don't just mean Toys R Us and KB, which are long gone in the States, although I would include this as well. But your department stores have dedicated and stocked toy sections with everything in, no matter how small the line was, no matter how dead the line was for some of the stores, they would have it. And you could, the toy section was big enough that it could be your babysitter while mom was shopping. It was frequently, we would go into the store, where are you boys going to be? My brother and I, we're going to be in the toy section. Okay, you can't leave the toy section. Nope, we won't. We'll stay right there.
Yep.
We would stay in the toy section, just look for a good hour or so while she shopped. But we had, when I was growing up, we had Woolworth, Hills. Hills was, I mean, their commercials were Hills is where the toy store, and they weren't lying. Walmart and Target weren't around yet, or at least not in our area. So it wasn't, you know, the go-to. So many like dead stores, Ames, Nichols, Zales, Sayers, like stores that have long come and gone. But every one of them would have five, maybe up to eight aisles of toys. And they would have islands in the middle. I remember Hills was one island was all the bikes, tons of different Friday, and one island was all the big play sets. Your USS Flag, your Castle Grayskull, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had all the toys. I remember seeing every toy from, like, the big hard rubber wrestling figures and the original G.I. Joes, all the way up to, like, maybe the first run of McFarlane toys at stores like this.
Yep.
And every time you were at the store, you had to go and walk around and do a loop and see what was new. But also, they were fully stocked. I go into Walmart, like my kid loves Pokemon. I go into Walmart, the entire Pokemon section's empty. Mm-hmm. All of it. And it'll stay that way for a while. There's a difference between sold out and just not having product. Sold out happens. Tickle Me Elmo sold out. Cabbage Patch Kids sold out. This is just you didn't order right. For a different project, I was watching a Todd McFarlane interview, and he was talking about McFarlane Toys. When he first started that company. And he was missing some deadlines at first. And they're like, we're going to pull your contracts. Because we, Toys R Us, Walmart, you know, whoever he was selling it through, we need to guarantee these products are in our stores, you deliver them on time, and that space has a product in there. Because if there's nothing in that space, we make no money off of that space. I worked retail for years, and one of the things I always remembered is you can't sell empty space. If the product that's supposed to be there is sold out, put something else there.
Yep.
Can't sell empty space. Walmart and Target is half empty every time, no matter which one I go into in what city. Their toy sections are always just decimated. And yes, there's collectors. There's like a new Ghostbuster line that just came out. Every other toy collector I follow online is either complaining that they don't have them or showing a picture of them buying the entire case. There's no in-between for it. So, okay, that's probably gone. But Pokemon shouldn't be all gone. Star Wars. Yeah, there's probably some Star Wars toys. Like, anything, any current popular toy line should not be sold out. It should be full. Like, I remember going to store for G.I. Joe or He-Man or whatever, and it was, like, 20-plus feet of space, floor to ceiling, full.
Yep.
Figures, vehicles, accessories, everything.
Yep.
You had to choose... Every option you wanted was there, and it's like, oh, mom said I could only buy one. Which one do I buy? Now I go store with my kid. I'm like, well, there's only one here. Do you want that one or no? I don't know what happened. Cost of plastic, change in retail. I don't know.
I think it's a change in retail. Like honestly, I just think the retailers, like Walmart and them, I don't know. Like they're just so big and they got so much to focus on that they don't pay attention to stuff like that. Maybe. But yeah, like, I just wanted to add a couple things. For a He-Man figure, right? You go in there, you're allowed to pick one. And that was the struggle. It's like, which one do you pick, right? So you'd have to really think it out. It's like, I really want this one, but there's like 20 of them. This one I also want, but there's only two of them. So I'm going to get that one because hopefully one of those 20 of the other one will be here next time. And you'd have to think strategically. And like you said, like one of our local stores up here, one of our department stores was called The Met. And The Met always had He-Man toys in stock. Like it never ran out. And then later Ninja Turtles, G.I. Joe, you know, whatever the brand, like, there was, yeah, like you said, no empty space. And Walmart's the same up here. Like, absolutely. Like, you go in there, because sometimes I go in there to just see what's there type of thing. Like, I don't buy a lot of toys anymore unless I see an awesome action figure that, you know, I absolutely have to get. Like, when I saw in the Marvel section when they had the Grey Hulk, I'm like, yep, I don't have any of these other action figures, but I got to get the Grey Hulk because I know that's rare and that's awesome. But yeah, like, you go there and there's so much empty space. It doesn't make sense. One thing that I miss about the old department stores, and not even the department stores, but even like certain pharmacies would have like a devoted toy section, right? There's this one pharmacy I remember as a kid. It's called the Medicine Bottle. And I remember my mom getting Castle Grayskull put on layaway for me.
Oh, jeez.
You know, because, I mean, my mom and dad, they, you know, when I was younger, they didn't have a lot of money, right? And I can only imagine how much that Castle Grayskull, like, probably back then it was still like 40 or 50 bucks, which was a lot of money for them. So she just wanted to make sure, you know, do you really want this? Yes, I want it. Well, we can't get it today, but we can get it in 2 weeks. So they put it on layaway for us. And I remember, you know, the lady at the Medicine Bottle, like, I remember she, like, took me in the back there and showed me the shelf she was putting it on. And she said, you know, this is yours. It's safe. And no one's going to take it. It'll, you know, when your mom has, you know, in 2 weeks when your mom can get it, you know, you can take this home with you. And I still remember that. Like, I was probably, I don't know, 4 years old at the time. But I still remember that. And I miss that. Like, I think Walmart and stuff, they do layaways and stuff. But back then, like, you know, the fact that they took me in the back and showed me, right? I don't think they do that sort of thing anymore. But yeah, you know, same thing, like you were saying, Kev. Like, my mom would tell me to go to the toy section, and that's where I'd stay. And as long as I stayed there and I was good, you know, I could pick something. You know, whether it be a He-Man or a Ninja Turtle or whatever it was at the time, Captain Power. You know, I went through a G.I. Joe phase as well. It was awesome. It was absolutely awesome. But now, all these, you know, pharmacies and stuff, like, up here anyway, they might have a toy section, but usually there's no good toys. It's usually more catered towards little kids, like, very little. You know, the action figure market isn't really big in the smaller department stores. Like, you have to go to Walmart. Fortunately for us in Canada, we still have Toys R Us. They were able to save Toys R Us Canada. Ironically, I haven't been in there since they saved it. I know I should get in there one of these days. You know, but now with all the COVID thing going on, I don't even think it's open right now. But yeah, no, that was a good one. I completely understand the whole toy section phenomena. That was awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's do a lightning round. And then if you have one that you want to really focus on, we'll keep that one at the end. So I'll go quickly through my lightning round stuff. Obviously, TV shows being canceled, you know, I hate, especially when it ends on a cliffhanger. Dallas 2012, you know, Bobby Ewing's son, Christopher, did he blow up in that car? I don't know. I'll never know. Did he survive? I hope he did. You know, Star Trek Enterprise finally was getting good, and then they got canceled. Comic books being canceled, you know, like, and I've mentioned this before, when Peter David, you know, quit, the Hulk wasn't canceled, but the direction he was taking the Hulk was canceled by editorial, so he left the book. So as far as I was concerned, it was canceled. What else is on my lightning round? Star Trek conventions. Like I still attend a Star Trek, not this year, obviously, because of the COVID thing. But I attend a Star Trek convention in Vulcan, Alberta, every summer, except for last summer I didn't go. I'm really kicking myself in the ass for not going last year, now that there isn't one this year. But the creation-centric Star Trek conventions, like they do the Vegas convention every year, they do the Star Trek cruise every year, but creation used to go all over North America. I know they used to come to Edmonton twice a year. They would come in March, and they would come in October and do a Star Trek convention. So they'd have one Star Trek star. You know, they'd have Star Trek vendors. Like, it wasn't like a Comic-Con. It was just Star Trek. I really miss those, because being a Star Trek fan, I love the Comic-Cons, too. Don't get me wrong. You know, I love going to Calgary. I love, you know, being able to buy comic books and meet Star Trek stars and meet, you know, Hollywood celebrities, you know, like Danny Glover, for example. You know, it's cool. But, you know, I miss the Star Trek-centric conventions. And then last but not least, magazine-sized black and white Conan books. I miss those so much. And this is the one I'm going to spend a little time on talking about. These Conan books were the size of magazines. They were in the magazine rack. They weren't on the spinner racks. They're black and white. For years, Roy Thomas wrote them, and other writers and great artists, great covers. They're more adult, using air quotes, adult comics, although they weren't that bad, really. Savage Sword of Conan and Conan Saga. I really liked those books. There was the war one called The Dam that they used to do. I can't remember what else they had. But for years, like my extremely local restaurant / hotel that was like 10 minutes from where I lived, we would go there. Years ago, they got rid of their comic book section, but they kept the Conan books for, I guess, because they were magazine format. So for years, like, you know, if that's as far as we went, like if we didn't go to town, where they actually sold comic books, and then we just went to the hotel or the restaurant or whatever, I could at least pick up a Conan book. And I miss those. I really do. And what made me think of it is because Comixology is putting a bunch of those old Savage Sword issues on their app at $2 a piece, which isn't bad. It's, you know, I bought the Conan, why am I blanking on her name? Red Sonja. What the heck did they call that one? It was a special issue anyway. I bought that today, actually. But yeah, it really made me think about those old magazine-style Conan books. I really miss those. And I know some comic book stores you can still get, like, the magazine-style comic books. Like, I know they did the Black Label not All-Star Superman.
They did Batman Damned and Harley.
Yeah, well, they just, I think it's Superman Year One, I think, with...
is that oversized? Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, with Frank Miller. It wasn't that good. but you know, it's still cool. It was still nostalgic to hold that book and flip through the pages. But to me, that's the best way to read Conan, is the magazine style, you know, black and white. As much as I love the, you know, like the comic book Conan the Barbarian, where it was colored and everything, Savage Sword and Conan Saga were just a little bit better. I enjoyed those just a little bit more. Kevin, what are your thoughts on those books?
So when I first got into comics, that seemed weird to me for some reason. And I guess it was because I saw comics as, you know, bright Marvel, DC, and I knew what Archie was, and, you know, the Disney ones.
Yep.
But something seemed generic, low-run, bootleg, dirty, whatever, about the magazine ones. I don't know why. But I was like, I don't think I'm supposed to see this. Like, I don't know. It felt like there was something wrong about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I would see it because I'd be digging through that same shelf of the magazines, because magazines are usually, you know, by theme on a rack. I'd be digging through that same area of the shelf for Mad or Cracked, which yep. they were perfectly fine for me. But for some reason, you know, the Conan ones,
yep.
If there's any, like, Warren Publishing. And then for a short time, someone had a giant oversized Nightmare on Elm Street one out. Ooh. I forget who published that one.
Cool.
But yeah. And now I'm like, why didn't I get those? Why didn't I grab those? Like, now I want them. I feel like, you know, there's a lot of things I go back to on various stuff that, you know, on podcasts I've been on or stuff I wrote. There's a lot of things where I'm like, if I had an older brother, would I have gotten into that? Like, I almost needed someone to show it to me, you know, but I wasn't mm-hmm. going to discover on my own like that. And I know my local shop, whenever they open, I can dig through the bins again. They have a whole magazine section, and there's a bunch of those Conans and like old Starlog and you know, the sci-fi magazines, all sorts of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think I need to just grab some at random.
Yeah. And it is awesome. Like, yeah, like you said, like when the shops open up, when the conventions start up again, I do want to start getting it back into collecting those old magazine Conan books. Because I used to have a big stack of them. But like most stupid kids, you know, you reach a certain age and you're like, oh, comics aren't cool anymore. You know, we had a garage sale and I sold them. And I sold like pretty much my old He-Man collection as well. Man, I wish I'd go back and just do a Homer Simpson thing and just, you know, maybe a little Bart Simpson, you know, strangulation. You know, what are you doing? Do you realize how important these things will be when you're older? And it's funny because I still remember, I think I remember the guy that bought them. He bought the whole stack off of me, and he was probably in his early 20s, you know, like, you know, he loved that. He was so happy that he got that stack, and I think, I forget what I got for it, like $10 or something. And of course, ooh, $10. But yeah, if I could go back in time. But yeah, that's, you know, that's next on my list. Like, I've since went back and bought a bunch of He-Man action figures, and like, I have so many He-Man action figures now from the various conventions I've gone to. I've got my Castle Grayskull, I've got my Snake Mountain. I just got to get the Fright Zone, and a few other play sets, and some various vehicles. But now that I've got that rebuild collection done, I think I'm going to focus on the Conan magazines and start rebuilding those. And I'm sure my wife will be happy about that.
You know, my wife is going insane because my last trip to the shop, when I bought a bunch of bags and boards, I'm like, this is just comforting. This has become a zen-like thing.
Yep.
I'll just sit here, I'll look into the other room TV, or I'll play a podcast or something, and just zone out. And now I'm through it all. Hopefully next week I get more, but I have my stack out of, I want these bag and boarded next. This is my next batch I want to go through, because these are ones that either have actual value or have sentimental value. So there's just a pile, and she's staring at going, when are you cleaning this up?
Mm-hmm. All right, Kev, what do you have on your lightning round?
Okay. I miss play places at fast food. You know, McDonald's, Burger King tried having it for a while. And sure, it was dirty and gross and whatever, but it was just part of the experience.
Mm-hmm.
It was, if you've got to sit down and finish your food and try to keep off your energy, and then you get to go nuts for an hour or so.
Yep.
And as a parent now, looking back, geez, the patience our parents had to allow us to do it and to just sit there and hear kids screaming, crying, and, you know, being all dirty when you've just eaten I don't know, McDonald's is probably a little better back then than it is now.
Well, there's no play places anymore, like in your area?
We found one, and apparently there's like two or three left in the state, and one happens to be nearby.
So,
we were on a long trip, and we were on our way back that night. And if it wasn't at night and I didn't see it like lit up out of the corner of my eye, I would have drove right by it. I just thought it was just another McDonald's. And we're driving by and I can see it all lit up. And I hit my wife. I was like, so we have to make a plan to take him to that. Mm-hmm. And my kid in the back, who I thought was asleep, goes, take me where? I was like, don't worry about it, buddy. He goes, do you mean that awesome McDonald's play place we just drove by? I'm like, oh, I guess we're going. So yeah, that's the only one. But you can see like holes and where, you know, other ones in the area were remodeled when they took it out. And it's just a shame. Yeah. Someone posted, I think it was on Twitter within last week, someone bought a bunch of them and was selling them all. They're in the front yard of his house. It's like $19,000 for all of it.
Holy crap. Yeah. Well, when my kids were little, like, they were still very prominent. Like, I want to say it's only in like the last 10 years where they're kind of been phasing them out.
It's probably safety.
Yeah, I think it's an insurance thing, to be honest with you.
Probably.
But I remember this one we went to, and it's a town called Hinton. It's, I don't know, 3 or 4 hours from where I live. And we went there, and they had this massive one. They had, like, this two-story play place, right? So, and my kids were, man, how old would they have been? Like, 3, 4? You know, my oldest might have been 5 or 6. So anyway, they went into this two-story play place. So I can't remember which one it was, if it was my son or my daughter. My youngest wasn't born yet, so I was probably 24, 25 years old. And look up, and you could see, must have been my daughter. Because my son came down, and we could see her up there. We could see her through the window, and she wasn't moving. And I'm like, what's going on, buddy? And he comes down. It's like, she's too scared to go down the slide. And it's like, well, tell her to come back the way she came. She's too scared. She's too high up. She won't go. She won't move. So we sent him back up, you know, talk to his sister, get her, you know, talk her into coming down. We'll catch her at the bottom of the slide. And it was a big slide. Don't get me wrong. It was one of them, you know, twirl slides, right? She would not come down. So, 25-year-old stepdad Chris has to go all the way up there to get his stepdaughter down. Oh man, I feel like a dork climbing up in that thing. But yeah, she would not come down. She would not come. No matter how much we negotiated, she would not come down.
You know what? You probably weren't even the first parent that day to have that. It was just your turn.
Probably. And it was one of those things, like, we were only supposed to be there, like, a half an hour. Like, cause I think we were driving up to my mother-in-law's. So, I mean, we still had, like, 2 or 3 hour drive ahead of us, right? And it's like, come on, please come down. And then it's like, oh, man, I guess we're going up there. But, yeah, I do miss those for sure. Absolutely. But, Kev, what else is on your list there?
I also miss, during the school year, knowing what time of day it is based on what's on TV. So I'd get off the school bus sometime between 2:30 and 3. We were usually let out at 2:10, so whatever the 2 o'clock cartoon is just not going to happen. Hopefully you're home by 2:30. From 2:30 to 5 is cartoons. 5 and 5:30 is usually some syndicated comedy. Cheers, Cosby Show, yep. Something like that. 6 o'clock is local news. 6:30 is national news. 7 and 7:30 is Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy, or Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune, depending on where you live. Mm-hmm. It's always one then the other. And then 8 o'clock could be whatever TV is on tonight. And by the time, usually homework was done between 6 and 8. Cartoons are done. There's something I want to watch at 8. Let me try to get the homework done. But I was still in front of the TV, though.
Yeah. So what time did you guys start school? Like, if you were out of school at 2:10, when do you start?
First class would be at 8. We were probably in the building by 7:30, 7:40.
Wow. Yeah, like up here, like our first class started at like 9.
And oh God, I wished when I was in school.
But we went till 3:30 though.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, yeah, like by the time, well, I want to say maybe 3:25 we got let out of class. Probably 3:35 is when the buses rolled out of the school. I was usually home probably, I don't know, 10 or quarter after 4, something like that. But for me, unfortunately, we didn't have after-school cartoons. Not till I got older when we got that satellite dish. And then, you know, you'd have, like, X-Men on Fox and, you know, Batman the Animated Series and stuff like that. So a lot of my after-school viewing was, like, The Golden Girls. Like, that was on 5 days a week. I love The Golden Girls. I still love them. Night Court. Cheers. What else was there? Wings. That's another one. But anyway, Kevin, what else is on your list?
I think that's all I got for now. I can also see us revisiting this topic in the future, too.
Oh, absolutely. And like this is kind of like the precursor to our theme for next month, like the podcast time machine. So we will definitely be going back to this topic at some point for sure. All right, well, let's move on to our next segment, which is Brain Candy. So for this segment, we take one thing that we have been watching or reading and we discuss it. Kevin, what do you got this week for Brain Candy?
All right, so I thought I would finish the whole season before we recorded, but I'm actually only halfway through. But I have been watching Lego Masters.
Hmm.
Now, the whole season's done. It was on Fox in the States, and it's on Hulu right now, so that's how I'm watching it. But it is reality competition, hosted by Will Arnett, because he was the voice of Batman in the Lego movies.
Oh, yeah.
So he's the host. There's multiple teams. I want to say they start off with 10, but I could be wrong there. And they have two Lego masters that help and guide and give you constructive criticism. Then they are the judges at the end. So Will Arnett comes out and he says, here's our project. You have 10 hours to complete it. And you just see, you know, it's very well edited. You see them rushing. You start to have a good feeling of who's going to be the star of that episode and who might be going home that episode. And anyone in between is just kind of ignored for this one. But it's crazy. They had one episode where, hey, we've cut these items in half. And it was stuff like a bicycle, a guitar, a computer. Build the other half out of Legos. Not exactly, but just let your mind go nuts and build the other half of this out of Legos.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy. Build a skyscraper, build something Star Wars, build something that we're going to drop from a height and explode and see who makes the coolest explosion out of it. Just absurd stuff. They're timed for everything. The crazy episodes, and this has happened for the last two, where I was watching it late at night in the living room, my wife's in bed, and I gasped. And my wife comes out. She's like, are you okay? Are you okay? I'm like, something fell on Lego. She just gives me a dirty look and goes back to bed. But there's been two episodes where they've had to move stuff. Like they're on a giant table with some sort of wheel or caster or something to slide it around. And they need to move it because all of their builds need to come together to make like one giant thing.
Mm-hmm.
They're sliding it and they'll just hit a bump in the floor. Like someone like left a Lego on the floor. Or someone runs over a shoelace or whatever. And it's enough to bump it and the whole thing tumbles over as they're about to be judged.
Yikes.
And I've just been like, oh my God. Like, I don't react that. I mean, I'm not watching a lot of reality shows now, but I've watched Survivor before and Big Brother and all that stuff. I'm freaking out over Legos falling. Which is absurd, but it's such a well-done show. You'll find someone to root for. The builds are incredible. When I first started watching it, it was like 2 months ago before stuff got shut down. We were visiting my mom, and we were just looking for something that like the whole family could watch while we were eating dinner.
Mm-hmm.
Like just mindless but enjoyable. We won't regret watching it, but if we never see it again, it doesn't matter. And the first episode was available on demand on her cable. We put it on. We ended up watching like two episodes that night because we all enjoyed it. We came back home, and my mom emails me a week later, and she's like, I've watched the whole series on my own. she just found it so entertaining. And, you know, like he's not in a Lego thing right now. It's been a couple months. But we've had our massive Lego ebbs and flows of, like, needing to build everything and then putting it away in storage and then bringing it back out.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Lego conventions, I guess you could call it. I didn't realize it was, but you could call it that when I was a kid. There was just people from, like, all over the area would build the coolest Lego things they could and put it on display and be judged and all. So, I mean, I'm having a blast watching this. Yeah, you see someone that you know someone spent a whole day building and it falls apart. Oh my God, it's just heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it might not even be a day. It could be like weeks or months that these guys spend on some of these things that they build.
Well, the live competitions is a countdown on the show. I think the longest I saw was they had 12 hours.
But, oh, I mean, okay, these are, I get you.
They come in as pros. Like, they know what they're doing. Yes, and some have more strengths than others. Like, hey, I could build something that looks like a person, but I couldn't build a building. Mm. So everyone has their own strengths and weaknesses, which makes it interesting depending on what the contest is for the night.
Well, I know in Alberta, they have, like, a Lego club where, you know, people join this club and they kind of like share their Lego and stuff and they'll send each other like plans and stuff on like how to build certain things and they'll do that sort of thing. And I know like in the local Comic-Cons, like they always have awesome Lego displays. I definitely admire those people, you know, the time, the patience, the dedication. Definitely something I couldn't do, that's for sure. For my brain candy, I had a couple quick mentions, and then I got the one I'm going to talk about be a little bit longer. So I'm currently watching the final season of Adventure Time. I bought the DVD.
Careful.
Okay, I won't reveal anything.
The last new one I saw was the Stakes miniseries. With Marceline and the vampires from her past came back.
Okay.
I stopped watching them and I haven't been able to go back to it yet.
I can't remember if that... I don't know if that is on the final season or if it's
before No, that. Because Islands comes after that, which I haven't watched yet.
Yeah, like I did watch that one. And then, No, it's been good. I've been enjoying it. I bought the DVD last year. The same weekend I met Finn and Jake at the Calgary Comic Con, John DiMaggio and, oh, I can't remember Finn's name. Super nice people. Like, the guy who plays Finn, like, I think he's like in his early 20s. He is so small. He's thin and he's short. He's maybe like 5'3", 5'2". Probably weighs like 90 pounds. But, you know, you get talking with him and it's Finn. It's amazing. And then, of course, John DiMaggio, you know, he was the voice of Bender, you know, but he does a bunch of voices. He's a very gifted voice actor. Super nice guy. So I went out and bought the final season because I hadn't watched it yet. Now, you know, a year plus later, I'm finally getting to it. And I only have two more discs left in the four-disc set, so I'm enjoying it. And I'm also enjoying the current season of Rick and Morty. The final five episodes of the season are just airing now, and they're good. The last episode, wow. Did that go dark? Wow. That's all I can say.
For any Rick and Morty fan to say that one went dark, like, it already is.
Yeah.
It already is in every episode. It went dark.
It was a great episode. Like, honestly, it probably is my favorite one of the season so far. But, yeah, it went dark. Like, I don't want to say too much, but it went to some dark places. Let's just say they did a parody of Alive, the movie.
Oh, God.
For one sequence of this episode. Yeah. And a lot of in that episode, I love, there's a lot of animation references, like the Alive thing. Everyone on the plane was dressed like characters from South Park, which I thought was interesting. And then there's one sequence. I don't want to say what Morty does, but he's doing something, and it's clearly outside of Moe's Tavern. Like, it's exactly, like, the animation's exactly like Moe's. What his tavern looks like on The Simpsons. But yeah, it's been a great season. And last but not least, a few episodes ago, I mentioned that I watched Westworld season 3. And I think I gave it a positive review at the time. But now that I've really been thinking about it and digesting what I saw, the 8 episodes and all that, I'm giving it a 1.5 out of 5. This season, it really, like, upon reflection, wow, it was not as good. Like, what really drove it home for me was I watched some videos about season 1, and I remembered all the great things that they did in season 1, how they blew me away, like, with the revelations, who's a robot, who's not a robot. Anthony Hopkins featured very prominently in season 1, and he was amazing in season 1. Like, I think it's some of the best acting Anthony Hopkins has ever done. And then it's just this season, it's like it's a completely different show. Like, it doesn't even feel like Westworld anymore. You know, every once in a while you'll see a little bit of, you know, a glimmer of what it used to be, and then it honestly, this season 3 of Westworld kind of reminded me of Star Trek Picard. You know, comparing, like, Westworld season 1 is like Star Trek The Next Generation, and Westworld season 3 is like Star Trek Picard. It's that kind of vast difference. Yeah, it was a short, convoluted season, and just a mere shadow of what it used to be.
I know they're getting a 4, and I believe that they know they went too far in one direction, so they're going to try to course correct.
Yeah, I'm thinking next season we're going to get a big time jump. We're going to probably go decades, maybe even centuries into the future. I'm thinking that that's what's going to happen, because season 2, they had a post-credit scene where it clearly was taking place like hundreds of years in the future. And then this season, they also did a post-credit scene? Or maybe it was just before the end of the episode, where one of the characters clearly, who's a robot, has clearly been sitting there so long, deactivated, and he activates, like, he comes to and his eyes open. He's been sitting there so long, he literally has, like, dust, like, so many layers of dust on his body. So, what happened? Like, you know, clearly he's been sitting there a long time, and he's sitting in a hotel room, so it's like, what happened to the people that ran the hotel that they would just leave someone sitting there for decades? Centuries, maybe? I don't know. So
Steven Spielberg's AI, didn't they have ones that had obviously been left and forgotten for a while?
Yeah, I think so. But
I only saw it the one time, so it's been a while.
Yeah, me too. I think so. But, like, for this character, like, because he goes into, he basically uploads his consciousness into, I can't remember what they call it, basically where a bunch of them are. Because he has to go get some information. So basically his body shuts down and he just sits there, right? So then later at the end of the episode or whatever, he wakes up and he's covered in dust. So clearly he's been in like that, he's been uploaded for a very long time before he got downloaded back into his body. And yeah, we'll see what happens. Supposedly Aaron Paul's in it. He played Jesse Pinkman on Breaking Bad. He I guess, has signed up for further seasons. He was in this season, and he was good. Like, don't get me wrong, I really liked him. There were things I liked about this season. It's just, man, it really is not what it used to be. It's the best way I could describe it. All right, well, let's move on to our Enders segment. And we got a few things to discuss for our Enders.
Just a couple. I have a couple ideas where you're going.
Well, let's start with the news that broke yesterday. And that is Ruby Rose quits Batwoman. Did you watch any episodes of Batwoman, Kev?
No, I'm so far behind on all my hour-long shows.
I think I watched...
Which is a shame. I was excited for it, too, and I just haven't.
I was excited for it as well. Basically, because my way of thinking is, why aren't they doing a Batman TV show at this point? Like, why is that not a thing? Like, you know, they did Gotham, but I don't want to see Bruce Wayne as a kid. I want to see Batman. So I was hoping, you know, if Batwoman was successful, they would say to themselves, hey, you know, we can do this for TV. And especially now, like, I don't understand, like, DC has this partnership with HBO. You know, like, they did the Watchmen TV series for HBO. They're, you know, doing the Snyder Cut release of Justice League with HBO. Why not do a Batman series for HBO? Like, there's so, like... You can find a Batman, you know, you could cast, you know, a good actor in there. You know, you could have some, you know, great villains. You could, so much mythology could be covered. And you could spin it off into movies, too. Like, you could do Batman movies with this actor, with this cast, as well as do a TV series. Like, there's so much potential. And I was really hoping, like, Batwoman would, you know, show them, like, hey, this can be done. But it's not that good. I couldn't even get through the first episode. I checked out. I really didn't like it. I thought it was kind of goofy. They're really pushing the politics, real world politics, a little bit too much in that show. I did watch a couple, well, at least one more episode when they did the crossover, the Crisis on Infinite Earths. Crossover. I think part one was on Batwoman. So I watched that episode with what's his name coming back as Bruce Wayne, Kevin Conroy, which I thought was genius. I thought that I thought that was great that he plays the older disabled Bruce Wayne from the Kingdom Come era. But yeah, the formula was just too. Much like the Berlanti DC formula, you know, you have to have your hero, you have to have the geeky super nerd that helps the hero out, then you got to have your supporting cast that knows the secret identity of the superhero, and they're like the backup team that helps the superhero. You know, like, it's like, you know, guys, do something different. Like, why do you got to follow this formula? You know,
work every time.
Yeah, like Arrow does it or did it. Flash did it. Well, Arrow and the Canary, or the Green Arrow and the Canaries, it will be doing it. Supergirl does it. Like, it's like enough. You know, like, you guys do something a little bit different. But one of the things that they like, apparently, she's under contract, so she's walking away from this project. So. I don't know if she was, like, people are saying that she quit, but now people are saying that she was fired. Apparently, when she was filming season one, she buggered up her back while filming it. Like, mm-hmm. she actually had to have back surgery. If it's that, I don't blame her for leaving. Like, I think she's perfectly fine as Batwoman. I didn't think it was a good show to begin with. But then they also said, you know, they're going to be doing season two. They are going to recast her, and they're going to find someone from the LGBT community. Did I get that acronym right? LGBT.
Yes.
for the role.
Which I think you have to for Batwoman. I think there's some where you don't, but I kind of think...
See...
She's DC's biggest out character.
And that's the thing. I'm not saying that Batwoman should be straight or anything. Like, absolutely, like, she is gay. She's gay in the comic book, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I don't think you need to specifically cast someone from that community. You could cast anybody to play a gay character. Like, to me, it seems like if that's the criteria for your casting, now you're making it political. It's not about acting. It's about, you know, I don't even know how you could get away with doing that, to be honest with you. Like, to me, it just seems strange. You know, like, if they do cast someone from the LGBTQ community, that's fine. But in my mind, they should focus on getting a good actress. You know, you know, a good actress, whatever her sexual orientation may be, whether, you know, gay or straight, you know, can play a gay or straight character. You know, for example, How I Met Your Mother. Neil Patrick Harris, you know, he played Barney. I can't remember his last name, but you know, he was a womanizing character. Like, his character was he was a hound. You know, he was always going after women and trying to sleep with as many women as he possibly could. When in reality, Neil Patrick Harris is gay. So this womanizer is played by a gay man. And it worked because he's a good actor, and he made you believe that he was that character, you know? So I really don't think that should be the priority for casting. I really think they need to focus on getting a good actress, and whatever her sexual orientation may be should not define her being hired, I think.
Now, the Barney character argument, that is a very good point. That's a good point. I would say for this character, for it being a heroic role, and I think it's the heroic role and it being an icon that is making a difference for me. Like, Barney was kind of a villain for a lot of that. Like, you weren't supposed to cheer for him for most of that series. I think whoever gets the role next is going to be put in a position of, you have this role, which is, from day one, she was a lesbian superhero. It wasn't added later, like we've seen with other characters. It was from day one. So it is iconic in a very big way. Even if whoever they get as the next actress is not gay or bi, at least we'll say, you are going to get attention. You are going to be expected to answer certain questions. You are going to be expected to be a role model, an example for this group, even if you're not a part of this group. And if you're not willing to do that, maybe you don't want the role then.
Yeah.
Because every question this new actress is going to get is going to be related to, and this character is lesbian.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Like, that's definitely going to have to be something that they need to be prepared for. It's kind of like Rami Malek when he was cast as Freddie Mercury, right? You know, Freddie Mercury himself said he was bisexual. People say he's gay. You know, like, he was cast in that role. Like, he's going to have to, you know, he's playing this bisexual / gay icon. And he himself is, from what I understand, he is straight, because he is with the actress who played Mary on the, I can't remember her name, played Mary on the movie. You know, and he pulled it off. Like, he was cast perfectly because he was a good actor. And he, you know, played the role of Freddie Mercury and everything that came with it. You know, I just... For me, I think, especially with this show not being very good, like, honestly, the acting, like, she was fine in the role. I think it's the other actors that kind of bring it down. They really need to focus on good acting, I think, versus, you know, checking off that box, right? Like, you know, if you can't sell the show, what does it matter who's in the lead, really? You know, I'm not saying change the character. Keep the character true to who she is. But, you know, you really need a good actress to lead that show. And that might have been part of the problem. You know, maybe part of the problem was, you know, maybe she just wasn't leading the cast the way a lead's supposed to. You know, kind of like, you know, like Patrick Stewart, you know, for Star Trek Next Generation. You know, he was not just the captain on the show, but he was also captain of the cast, right? He was their leader. You know, maybe that Ruby Rose wasn't doing that. Maybe that's why the show was suffering. I don't know. I just really wish they wouldn't bring politics into it. I really don't like that.
I mean, for sure, they're going to try to find someone that is both. And they're not going to say this actress is a lesbian, but she's a terrible actress, but we're going to cast her. They're going to want someone that's both.
Yeah.
And if anything has to give, I'm sure it's going to be we'd rather have a good actor first. But, I mean, like, the Barney thing's throwing me off because before I was going to say, you know, if, and I'm just picking names out of a hat here, if like Benedict Cumberbatch plays a great Black Panther, mm-hmm. he still could never play Black Panther. Doesn't matter how good the actor is, that has to be a black guy.
Yeah.
But that's, and I know that's not quite the same.
Yeah. And that, but yeah,
I'm
that,
wondering if that in it, certain situations or with certain characters we're getting there.
Yeah, and yeah, that to me that's another debate, because that's like people calling for Michael B. Jordan to be cast as Superman, and it's like, okay, well, if you can cast a black guy to play Superman, why couldn't you cast a white guy to play Black Panther then? You know, like it's got to be it, to me. I just think it should go. It has to go both ways.
Well, and again, I would say it depends on certain characters. Does this character have to be white, black, gay, straight, Asian, Hispanic, whatever? Yeah. Certain characters do, and certain ones don't. Spider-Man, as Miles showed, which, and Miles and Peter Parker are two different people, mm-hmm. but it showed you can take this idea in any direction.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Even Gwen, Spider-Gwen, Ghost Spider, whatever. You know, you can take this core concept in any direction. I think Superman for Kansas, for Smallville, and for how he is, I do think Superman has to be white. You know, I think there's a part of Batman that has to be white. I think certain other characters, Wonder Woman should at least be Greek and olive skinned.
Mm-hmm.
Wonder Woman should not be like blonde haired, you know, English, we'll say.
Yeah, like Superman. Yeah, that's a tough one. Like what?
I mean, it's a longer debate.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like yeah, I'm not against, you know, casting different actors or different ethnicities for certain characters, but when it changes who the character is. You know, like, maybe just create a new character.
I will give you that, too. Instead of shoehorning this idea, it might be more interesting to create a new character with this idea. If Ultimate Universe, let's redo Peter Parker as a black guy, I don't think would work as well as here's Miles, here's a brand new character for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
And becomes iconic as well. Gwen sat on a shelf for decades, and this isn't, so it's like she's totally new, and she is, it's a new, you know, universe, dimension, whatever, but that works too. Now I did see, though, to jump back into the casting, I don't know if you've ever watched Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
I know of it, I haven't watched it, though.
One of the actresses on there is like, I will play Batwoman today.
Oh, I seen that, she tweeted that, I think.
Boy, she'd be good too. Yeah. She's a fantastic actress.
Is she like one of the leads? Like she's up there with like the Andy Sandberg or whatever his name is?
She's not. Since you don't watch, I can see the confusion. She's not the one that he ends up dating that he has a crush on throughout the beginning of the show. She's like a very street smart, serious, I don't laugh, you know, but it's all really a shell, an armor around me to hide how insecure I am as the series goes on.
Okay. But
she is like the toughest woman on the force, no nonsense, you know, can fight, can use firearms, can do whatever. You know, she's like their, almost like their muscle in a way, like a special forces. She's just no nonsense. And she gets some of the best lines on the show because she's got such a dry humor, too. But, I mean, she was also... I had to bow out because the show got awful. She made special appearances on Modern Family as Sofia Vergara's sister.
Oh, okay.
And plays a completely different character. Like, she's not a typecast person at all. I'm like, there's no way those two are the same person. It was that good of acting. I'm like, I refuse to believe this is the same person.
No, that's awesome. But yeah, like I said, I really don't want Hollywood to start, you know, denying people acting jobs based on their sexuality. I kind of feel that's by making that statement that they made, that's kind of what they're saying. Like, you know, just because, you know, like I don't think, you know, a person's sexual orientation should deny them access to a certain role. Like, for example, like, you know, if it is someone from the LGBT community, you know, up for a role for a straight person, as a straight person character, I don't think they should be held back because they're not a straight person in real life. You know, and same with Batwoman. Like, I just, I really don't like that was like the criteria that they were throwing out there.
And for a lot of characters, like, how much does their sexuality matter? Geez, let me think of something that we're familiar with, but doesn't really...
But...
Penguin.
Okay.
Just top of my head, okay?
Yep.
There's no great story of, like, Penguin in a relationship. Nope. Is Penguin gay, straight, bi? I don't know. Does it matter, character? No, as long as he commits a crime and, you know, has something for Batman and they fight and he's thrown in Arkham at the end. Like, it really doesn't matter. It's not part of the character. It was for Gotham, implied, but it was there. But you got, going back to the 30s with Penguin, like, I don't know what he is. I don't know who he dates. I don't know who he's interested in. And I don't care because it's not important for what I'm reading.
Mm-hmm.
You cast whoever you want as that, because that part is not important to his character. You could even throw religion in there for some of them. There's a handful that need to be a certain religion. You know, Ben Grimm has to be Jewish. Daredevil has to be Catholic. But very, very few.
Well,
and not the actor. I'm saying, like, the actor could be whatever, you know, the character itself.
Like, one thing about the casting, like, and I can't remember the actor's name, but he's on the TV show Shameless. And he played the Joker in Gotham. And I'm pretty sure he's gay in real life, like that actor. And he, like, I don't watch Gotham. Like, I just seen a few scenes that he was in. And from what I've been told, he's amazing as the Joker.
He's so good. I got to do like the last two seasons, I think. He's good.
But, like, with this casting thing, though, because the Joker, we know that he was in a relationship with Harley. So, you know, like, if that's the criteria that the Joker has to be played by a straight guy, then that guy wouldn't have been able to play him. And he was amazing as the Joker. Like I don't know, I just don't like that, you know, politics... That's being brought into it. Like, just cast a good actor, you know. But anyway, let's move on. I didn't know we were going to talk about that as long as we did. Hopefully they get their stuff together over at Batwoman. Apparently, there's a new live-action Avatar series going to be on Netflix.
The cartoon Avatar, not James Cameron Avatar.
Yeah, the cartoon Avatar. Yeah, Avatar: The Last Airbender. Apparently, I heard that they were announcing something. And I assumed it was going to be like a continuation of the Avatar cartoon, but apparently they're going to be doing a live action Avatar. Hopefully not in the style of M. Night Shyamalan's Avatar. But I'm hoping it'll be good. I was actually hoping that they were going to announce that they're going to do a continuation of the cartoon. Like, I would love to see Aang and the rest of the crew as adults. Like, in The Legend of Korra, you know, they did a few flashbacks where you saw Aang as an adult, when you saw Sokka as an adult and the rest of them. Toph, you've seen her as an old woman. You know, and it was neat, but I would like to see them, like say, in their 20s, right? Going on adventures and doing things to save the world. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about a live-action Avatar TV show just because of the things that they did with the animation. You cannot really replicate. You could, but I don't know if Netflix has the budget for it. I really don't.
Well, if you're going to do it anywhere, though, Netflix and HBO are your best options financially. Maybe Amazon. But Amazon's been promising like a lot of series that hasn't shown up yet, but I think they're putting all their money in Lord of the Rings whenever that gets going.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Now, I know this isn't a Geek Confessions episode, but I have not watched a second of Avatar.
The cartoon.
The cartoon. Ooh. And I know I should. And then I was just seeing something came up in my feed. Maybe did you share it? I can't remember who shared it. Of Avatar won the Peabody Award for excellence in character development, which no cartoon's ever done.
Okay.
And I was like, okay, I know I need to sit down and watch this. I know the movie tanked. I know people hated it. I know people love the cartoon. They're like, I'm going to just pretend this doesn't exist.
Yeah, I've only seen like bits and pieces of the live action. Just enough to know that it was crap. But yeah, man, I'm telling you, you got to watch it. Apparently, it wasn't on Netflix in the States. Apparently, it's been off Netflix in the States for a while. It's been on Netflix in Canada for a long time. I don't know if Legend of Korra is on there or not. So yeah, so they did three seasons of the original Avatar. The Last Airbender, and then The Legend of Korra is a sequel to that series, and that went 5 seasons, but the seasons weren't as long, though. They were shorter seasons. But yeah, the story's excellent, the animation's good. The original Avatar is definitely the best. You know, some great voice actors. Like Rene Auberjonois, I know he does some voice acting on that show. Mark Hamill, he plays the big bad guy. He plays what the heck do they call him? He's the king of the Fire Kingdom. And he's one, and it's such an awesome build up because he's one of those characters. He's referenced throughout the series, but you don't actually see him until like towards the end of the series, and then Mark Hamill does the voice, and it's just awesome. And the series ends with a big showdown between the Avatar and him, and it's so amazing. One of the best fight scenes ever. I envy you, man. It's such a good show. I watched it with my kids like when they were younger, and they loved it. And then Legend of Korra. Legend of Korra was pretty good. It takes place, I want to say like 50 years or 60 years after Avatar. Because the way the Avatar works is there's only one Avatar born at any time, right? The Avatar is someone that can, because in this world you can be a waterbender, you can be an airbender, you can be a firebender, or you can be an earthbender. So there's four bending abilities that you can have, and each bending has their own nation. So, if, you know, most people born in the Fire Nation are firebenders, and, you know, waterbenders, and so on and so forth. The Avatar can bend all four. He has all he has the abilities of all four, and he's the last airbender, because the Fire Nation wiped out the airbenders, and then the Aang, the last airbender, gets frozen. So, and then like 100 years later, he thaws out or whatever. But the problem is he has like his when he was frozen, he just found out he was the Avatar. So they just started training him in the other nation skills. So when he comes to, all he can do is airbend. So he has to learn how to waterbend. He has to learn how to earthbend, and then he has to learn how to firebend. So then when he dies, someone else is he's reincarnated as the next airbender, or sorry, the next avatar. So in The Legend of Korra, she was a waterbender, and then she found out she was the Avatar. So like in one episode, she actually talks to Aang, because the Avatar, as their powers grow, they can actually talk to the other avatars that came before them, because they're all the same person, so they actually do retain some of the memories and stuff of their experiences. So she actually talks to Aang. It's awesome. It's a great show. I can't recommend it enough. It's definitely one of my, it's in my top 10 favorite TV shows of all time.
I think I might be marathoning some cartoons next.
I gotta warn you, once you start marathoning that, especially in the season 2 and season 3 go on, it gets hard to turn it off. It really does. All right, so next up, I got two more items here. It was announced that The Maestro is getting a comic book series coming in August for Marvel Comics, written by Peter David and Dale Keown. People who don't know who The Maestro is, The Maestro is from, I think it was 91, maybe 92. They did a two-part prestige format miniseries of The Incredible Hulk called Future Imperfect, where the Hulk is brought to the future to confront, you know, this evil dictator that basically rules over the ruins of New York City in a kingdom that he calls Dystopia. And then when the Hulk gets there, he discovers that this evil ruler is actually his future self, called the Maestro. And anyway, I don't want to ruin it. It's a great, one of the greatest miniseries of all time in comic books, in my opinion. Originally, the artist was George Perez, with Peter David writing it. And then now they're doing the origin story of the Maestro. So we're going to see what led the Hulk to turn evil, and what the different things that he was able to do in order to become basically ruler of the world in this dystopian future. So, like I said, it's written by Peter David with art by Dale Keown, who is one of the more famous Hulk artists. He was on the Hulk for, I want to say, a couple years leading up to issue 400. I think issue 398 was his last issue. Amazing artist. He was the artist behind the Image series, The Pit. He's done a couple projects with Peter David in the last few years, like the end specials that Marvel Comics was doing, where they showed like the last story of each character, and the one they did with the Hulk, they had Peter David and Dale Keown work on that together, which was also amazing. And they did one, I want to say last year, for the 80th anniversary of Marvel Comics, like a bunch of old creative teams got together for certain characters that they used to work on to do a one-issue special. and I think it was called Last Call or something. And again, Peter David and Dale Keown did one for their Incredible Hulk comic book run. So for me, this is amazing news. I love the Maestro. You know, unfortunately, it was one of those plot threads that didn't get resolved in Peter David's original run on the Incredible Hulk, because he actually brought the Maestro back in issue like 460, I think, or 461. The Maestro came back, but unfortunately, Peter David's last issue was 467, so we never got to resolve that plot line. So maybe we might see something of that here. But I, from what I understand, this is just an origin story. But we'll see. Kevin, what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, great way, because I think anything right now for comics, you need big books to get people back in. Mm-hmm. You also don't need big summer crossovers where you need to buy like 30, 40, 50 titles to know what's going on. This is a great one. It's going to be huge for pre-orders, I'm sure. You get a lot of people in. They're in for the Maestro because they want to go back to the story. They're in for Peter David. They're in for Dale Keown. It's its own series. You don't have to buy a ton of other stuff. They're going to make a ton. And I think anything like this, any big storyline-driven thing right now, because I would say it's more... Dale Keown's great as an artist, of course, but I'd say it's a more storyline-driven thing.
Oh, yeah.
You've got to look at the movies, too. Any big story that comes out within the last 10 years and now for the rest of Marvel's future has got to be, is this a possible movie? Maestro's definitely a possible movie, mm-hmm. possible villain in some way, shape, or form. The more ideas you got for that character, the better the chances are. I think it's going to be huge. I think it's a great one to come in. And Marvel apparently, who is C.B. Sobolski? I might be pronouncing that wrong. But when he came in, he was saying that he wants to get more giant sellers out there. Mm-hmm. And not because it's got like a ton of covers or whatever, but because people are excited about it.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a huge one.
Oh, yeah. No, I myself am definitely excited. And the Maestro, he came back recently in, I want to say Battle World? When they did those...
I was going to say the Secret Wars.
Yeah, the Secret Wars, the spinoff of that one. Because, the Maestro ruled, like, North America, and, like, Doctor Doom ruled, like, Europe and... West Asia, and I think the Mandarin ruled the East, and basically, yeah, the world was divided up between all these supervillains, which was pretty cool. I thought that was a neat way to bring the Maestro back. But yeah, like, I definitely want to see them do something with this character, because so much awesome potential there. And bringing back the guy who created one of the guys that created the character with one of the, you know, defining artists of the 90s as far as the Hulk goes. It's absolutely amazing.
All right. I mean, the first choice would be Perez, of course, but mm-hmm. if he was younger or healthier, I'm sure he would.
Yeah.
So.
All right. So last but not least, we're going to end Enders with the announcement of a new Star Trek series. And it is Star Trek Strange Star Trek Strange New Worlds. So what this is, it is a spin-off of Star Trek Discovery, where we're going to see Anson Mount, who played Captain Pike in Star Trek Discovery, come back to that role. We're going to see Ethan Peck as Spock, Rebecca Romijn as Number One, and the other characters from the original pilot, Dr. Boyce, Lieutenant Tyler, Yeoman, I can't remember her name now, Yeoman something. We'll possibly see those characters recast, or maybe new characters created. So for those who don't know, Captain, going back in time, Captain Pike, Number One was his first officer, female first officer, which was a big thing back in the 60s. Mr. Spock, They were all characters from the original Star Trek pilot that Gene Roddenberry tried to sell to NBC. That got rejected, and then they told him, like, we'll give you a second pilot, but we need more action, we need more gunfights, we need cowboys and Indians in space, essentially, because back then, Westerns were the main TV series of the time. So then Jeffrey Hunter bowed out, who played Captain Pike, so they created a new character called Captain Kirk, and William Shatner was cast, and the rest is history. They used footage from the original pilot in the two-part episode The Menagerie in the first season of Star Trek. But unfortunately, Jeffrey Hunter never came back to be Captain Pike in anything Star Trek related, because unfortunately the actor died, I believe, in 1969. Or was it 70 or 71? It was around that time. He unfortunately passed away, and he never went to a Star Trek convention, never really got the props he deserved for helping sell the concept of Star Trek to get it going anyway. And then the highlight for me of season 2 of Star Trek Discovery was when they brought Anson Mount in as Captain Pike. Perfect casting, in my opinion. He's an excellent actor. He was the lead on Hell on Wheels, the Western series on AMC. Great actor. Perfect as Pike. Like, he nailed it, I thought. And Ethan Peck was good as Spock. He did pretty good. Gregory Peck's grandson. Rebecca Romijn. She's been in a lot of genre stuff. She was Mystique in the X-Men movies. Or the original X-Men movies. She was a model. She's done a number of acting gigs. She was pretty good as number one, I thought. I like the look of the Enterprise. I like the uniforms. They're way better than they are in Discovery. And from what I've read, the intention is this is going to be... Basically, I'm assuming they must be listening to, Star Trek fans finally, and they said that this is going to be more like the original series, more like Next Generation, where it's going to be episodic, one and done episodes. They're going to get back to exploration, that sort of thing. I'm really hoping that they do that. If they do that, I think this could be good. Fingers crossed again, but we'll see. I mean, I had high hopes for Star Trek Picard, based on the fact that Patrick Stewart was in it. I have high hopes on this one, based on the fact that Anson Mount's in it, but we'll see. Anyway, Kevin, what are your thoughts?
I was going to say, based on the stuff that you posted and other Trek fans that I know, everyone seems very excited for it, but also trying to hide or tamper down the concern. Mm-hmm. Been excited quite a few times lately, and you haven't followed through.
Yep.
I don't know if I'm wondering, and I know so many of you will always go back to Trek no matter what it is or isn't, as the case may be.
Yeah,
but I'm kind of thinking this is if this is a misstep, it's too many missteps in a row, and mm-hmm. a lot of people are done if they mess it up this time. You can forgive with time and distance, but there's not enough between Discovery, Picard, and now this. It might be too many hits in a row if they don't knock this one out.
Yeah,
for long time Trek fans.
Oh yeah, I think this is the last chance for me, to be honest with you. Like, even season 2 of Picard, I'm like, I don't even know if I'm going to... I don't know. Like, I'm probably going to watch episode, but...
Whereas, if these shows were, say, 5 years apart, so, 10 years total, you might be more forgiving. Like, oh, it's been mm-hmm. a while. But to have it all three in a row, that might... I think that's going to be too much for people if it's not great.
Yeah, And I'm hoping they're going in the right direction, because, like I said, what the article I read said that Alex Kurtzman said that he, you know, they want to go back to episodic, you know, each episode is a new mission, it's a new world. I like the fact that they're calling it Strange New Worlds. They're not calling, like, I guess they could call it Star Trek Enterprise, but you know, they're not naming it after a ship or a person. I like that they're doing something different with the title, which they really haven't done since Deep Space Nine. Like, I guess Picard, you know, that was the first one that wasn't named after a ship. Although, I don't know. Anyway, I like the title. I do. I'm hopeful, fingers crossed. But I'm also prepared for disappointment because, and not just that, but I'm telling myself I'm not viewing the show as continuity. I can't, because they've changed so much on Star Trek Discovery that it's not continuity anymore. It's its own thing. So we'll see what happens. Like, I'm hopeful. You know, maybe we might see a crossover, but, you know, I actually wouldn't mind seeing a crossover between Picard and this show. You know, like, I think that would be kind of cool.
Well, I mean, like, you go to your, to go back, you go to your favorite restaurant hundreds of times over the years.
Mm-hmm.
You go once and the food's bad and you think, all right, it's just a fluke. You go second time and food's bad. You're like, oh, what's going on? You go third time, they've now lost your business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And,
you know, and like you're saying, you're willing to try and you're hopeful, but this is it.
Well, like for me, like Star Trek Discovery, I'm not even, like, I know the third season still has to premiere. I'm not even going to watch it. You know, unless I start hearing good things like, oh my God, you know, they've completely changed, turned it around. You know, it's so much better. Then I might check it out, but going forward, I'm done with that show. So fingers crossed, hopeful for this show.
And there's just so much now. If you're not good, I got five other things I can watch that are.
And Anson Mount, like I said, he is a good actor, and I really like him. Like I got the chance to meet him last year. Super nice guy. But he also is known for doing bad projects. Like he did the Inhumans for Marvel. So, you know, like, we'll see. You know, like I said, he was the highlight of season two of Discovery. And like I said, I like the look of the show. I like the uniforms. I'm interested in the casting of the characters that aren't on the show, because this series takes place after the events of the original Star Trek pilot. So, you know, Dr. Boyce and Lieutenant Tyler and Yeoman, whatever her name was, maybe they're not on the ship anymore. Maybe they'll create new characters to replace them. Or maybe they will recast, because I know one thing that Star Trek fans are pushing for is to get Jeffrey Combs cast as Dr. Boyce. For those who don't know, Jeffrey Combs is a Star Trek actor who's done a lot of different Star Trek roles. He's best known for playing Wei-Yun and Liquidator Brunt on Star Trek Deep Space Nine. He's known for playing Shram, the Andorian, on Star Trek Enterprise. You know, little fun fact, he was actually considered for the role of Commander Riker all the way back in the original casting for Star Trek Next Generation. You know, he's been around, this guy. You know, he is a good actor. And as he's, I think, 65 now, he actually kind of looks like the guy who played Dr. Boyce, because Dr. Boyce was an older gentleman. Dr. Boyce was probably in his 60s or 70s. So, you know, it would definitely be fan service casting, but it would be so worth it. So worth it. But yeah, we'll see what
sometimes
we'll see what
fan
happens.
Service isn't a dirty word.
Yeah. But all right. Well, let's play that little game of where can we find you on the internet. And Kevin, where can we find you, sir?
You can find me across the internet. My blog is masslibrary.com, and then that is Mass Library is also Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, probably a couple other things out there. I have another podcast over on the Retro Network called The House Show, where me and two of my friends discuss 90s era pro wrestling.
Excellent. Excellent. I want to point out, last episode we did our Image Comics discussion. Unfortunately, Jason could not be with us, and I had mentioned that he was going to do a blog post about the notes he made about Image Comics. He has since done that. It is up on Nerdy Life of Mine. Is it nerdylifeofmine.com? I can't remember.
I think it's .blogspot.com.
Okay.
He's a WordPress.
Yeah, I can't remember if it's WordPress or Blogspot. But anyway, Nerdy Life of Mine. Just Google that. It's Jason's blog. He did an Image Comics post based on the notes he was going to bring to the podcast episode, because unfortunately due to scheduling conflicts, he couldn't make it to that recording. But we might one day revisit that topic. I told Jason that you know, we could definitely talk Image Comics for another episode. As for myself, you can catch me here at the Pop Culture Pub. I do, aside from the regular episodes I do with Kevin and Jason, I also lately have been doing what I'm calling the Deep Space Nine discussion panel episodes, where it's me and three other gentlemen that are Star Trek Deep Space Nine fans, and we discuss episodes. We discuss seasons. We've done season one and season two. Season one only has 16 episodes. Season two has 26. Our season two episode went way too long. So we've since had a meeting, because each season going forward is 26 episodes. So we got season 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7 yet. So we've decided, because we don't want to miss any episodes, that we're going to cut them in half. So the next episode we're recording, it's going to be season 3.0. So it's going to be the first 13 episodes of season 3. And that's the way it'll be going forward. And eventually we're going to do Star Trek Enterprise discussions. And the plan is we're going to do Babylon 5 discussion as well. Probably like the way we're doing this, where we split them in half and discuss the TV series Babylon 5. But that's later down the line. Like, that might be fall or maybe even winter by the time we get to Babylon 5. And that's a show I got to rewatch, because it's been a few years. But anyway,
Jason is nerdylifeofmine.com. I just double checked it. I apologize, Jason. You know I'm subscribed to your blog, so I just clicked the link in my subscriptions.
Yeah, that's like me. I got them pinned on my task, like my saved sites or whatever. So yeah, I don't even think of it. It's like phone numbers. Like I can't remember people's phone numbers now. It's crazy.
No. I got like two or three I know off the top of my head.
Yeah, me too. It's crazy. I can still remember my phone number from when I was a kid, even though it's been years since we've lived there. But anyway, I digress. So on behalf of myself and Mr. Kevin Decent, I want to thank you, dear listener, for taking the time to listen to the Pop Culture Pup podcast. This was our Days of Pop Culture Past episode, and we will see you again in the not-too-distant future.